This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Since the early 20th century, movies have been made that depict scenes of people living in poverty. These scenes were both informed by the culture in which they were made and influenced public opinions about what it means to be poor and or homeless. Stephen Pimper is senior lecturer in American politics and public policy at UNH, and his new book takes a look at how films depict people living in poverty. The book is called Ghettos, Tramps, and Welfare Queens, and he joins me now to talk about it. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Peter. Nice to be here.
So for this book, you watched nearly 300 American films that featured some element of poverty, and one of the things you looked at was how depictions of people living in poverty changed over time. I know that's a super broad question, yeah. But is there a way to describe the way depictions of people living in poverty changed over time?
So I wound up watching significantly more than 300 movies and wound up identifying 300 that I think wind up being significantly about poverty or homelessness in one way or another. And among the things that I found that surprised me a little bit is that I didn't, in fact, find much by way of a pattern. And I expected that at the very least, surely there's going to be something distinct about movies in the 1930s, right? During the height of the Great Depression, there's going to be something that singles out those portrayals. And I expected them to be more sympathetic, perhaps, and that there to be significantly more of them. Neither of those things turned out to be true. And I think that from my perspective, the story is, in fact, one of consistency over time. There's certainly lots of variation from film to film and director as to how these kinds of portrayals play out, but I've not seen anything that breaks down those patterns into decades or to particular moments in political history.
There were quite a few films that you mentioned here that when poor people were depicted, they were often depicted not entirely in three-dimensional ways. They were often props for other more well-off characters who have some other goal, and that goal was the focus of the film, not necessarily the goals of the people living in poverty.
And this is something that for me popped up over and over and over again and became a little bit surprising in its prevalence in that. If you think of a movie like, say, The Fisher King, if some of your listeners know that, or more recently, The Soloist. Fisher King is a movie that presents itself as being about Robin Williams, a homeless man living in Central Park. The Soloist presents itself, and you can see this if you look at the advertising about it, about a former Juilliard musician played by Jamie Foxx who is homeless living on the streets in Los Angeles. But if you watch those movies and pay attention to what's going on, those are not the characters that the movie is most interested in. Those are movies about the ways in which those non-homeless men fix themselves, redeem themselves through the act of coming to understand and helping the poor and homeless person. And it's not quite that they are ignored, but that they are tools. And this, I mean, for me, it echoes a lot of sort of very old religious kind of ideas, right? That the reason that the poor are put on the earth is so that we can use them to attain and secure our place in heaven. I find that this plays out in lots and lots and lots of movies.
Mm-hmm. Were there any movies that you felt were accurate or had fair descriptions of people who were living in poverty or who were homeless?
There were, absolutely. I mean, I think that for me, one of the best, unfortunately, we have to go back a number of decades, but a 1974 movie called Claudine, which for my money is probably the best portrayal of what it is to be on welfare and try to raise kids under the old AFDC program, as you're likely to find, with Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones. And it really is. It's beautifully portrayed, but it also does a better job of actually understanding the ways in which those policies played out in the world. And probably not surprisingly, right? We're talking about Hollywood movies, but we don't find an awful lot of careful attention to the reality of the ways in which these policies function among real people. What we get is a lot of echoing of those public stereotypes and the less empathetic public rhetoric around poor people and homeless people.
One of the things you also focused on in this book is how social workers and people who work to advocate for these people are portrayed. What did you find about depictions of people in social work?
Social workers fare very, very badly indeed in the movies. And I say this as part of my teaching responsibility as I teach policy for social workers. By and large, in the movies, if there is a social worker present, then she, and it is almost always she, is going to make things worse rather than better. It's in a funny way one of the few instances in which we see a radical perspective played out, because, you know, within the social work profession on the far left, the sort of radicals in social work have been complaining literally since the 20s, right, since the advent of Freud, that social work is ultimately too conservative and too judgmental and doesn't understand or appreciate the lives of poor people. Movies adopt that perspective. And if a social worker is showing up, she is going to be the villain. She's going to be haughty. She's going to be clueless. She's not going to be listening carefully. And she's going to be much more interested in rigidly applying rules and regulations than she is in actually offering assistance to people.
Mm-hmm. And has that changed over time?
You know, there's a period in the early century, the teens and the 20s, in which we see a fair number of social workers. I mean, the social worker is sort of a regular character, if anybody knows sort of Clara Bow's It. The team of social workers wind up being important to this story. During the height of the progressive era, maybe it's because, you know, we're paying more attention to what's going on in cities and as we're building these helping professions. More recently, almost entirely absent. I mean, we've got, you know, a social worker or two in Precious, but probably nothing of note before that until Claudine, which I referenced earlier in the 70s.
Precious, that movie that came out less than a decade ago that really made waves when it came out, just because it was considered one of the more brutal depictions of what is the truth of life for some people. Although you remark in this book with respect to Precious that this might be an outlier, and this may not be exactly how most people, for example, depend on welfare or use welfare.
I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that I reserve my harshest critical language in the book for any movie to Precious, a movie that it is quite difficult to describe how much I loathed. And in part because we do not, by and large, get an awful lot of depictions of African-American families in the 1980s in Central Harlem living on public assistance. So it feels to me that when we do, to get a story that traffics in age-old, ugly, invidious stereotypes. I mean, this is the embodiment of the welfare queen and the rapacious black male, if you look at that movie. The argument is not that such people do not exist, but the argument is that everything we know out of across all of the social sciences is that that is not the experience of most people using those programs, and that's not what Harlem was like in poor and low-income communities in the 1980s. To only give viewers that portrait seems to me doing a disservice, particularly when you know note that Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry were among the producers. So they've got disproportionate power and influence. So it seems to me, and who am I to speak for them, right? But it seems to me that they've got a moral obligation to be more selective about which kinds of images they show to a broader public, knowing that they're going to make more people see that movie because their name's attached to it.
When we go to see a movie, any movie, are we likely to encounter a realistic scene of what it's like to live in poverty? Or is it, in general, is American cinema just missing the mark?
I think to generalize, American cinema is by and large missing the mark. You know, and some of this is, I think, probably not surprising in that because of the nature of the medium, there are not lots of poor and homeless people involved in making movies. There aren't a lot of poor and homeless directors or screenwriters or producers. So what we wind up with is almost inevitably, perhaps, this second or third hand portrait of what those experiences are like. And, I think that one of the ways in which we can do better at that is to approach movies about poverty and homelessness the same way we approach movies about the police or about war or about the CIA, right? It's now standard practice in Hollywood. You're making a police movie, you go out, you hire retired police officers typically who can show your actors how to hold the gun and talk about what procedure actually looks like, in this belief that authenticity matters. We could do the same for other kinds of movies, including those about poor and homeless people, to actually bring in people with a deeper knowledge of that experience to help shape the kinds of narratives and the images that get created.
Mm-hmm. You ask in this book, what do these depictions mean for politics and policymaking? Do you see some kind of connection between the way these people are depicted in film and the policies that our government implements?
I do. And when I first set out to write the book, my hope was very much that I would be able to trace a line of causation, to really identify these are particular political or cultural moments that produce these kinds of movies, or here are particular movies that produce these kinds of political actions. And I wasn't really able to do that in a way that I found satisfactory at all. And part of the problem, I think, is that we're looking at a feedback loop, right? We all inhabit this particular culture that has very particular attitudes about poor and homeless people. Movie makers are not excluded from that. So they wind up drawing on that in order to produce those images, which then wind up reinforcing those very distorted public conceptions about what it means to be poor in America and who's poor in America.
Well, Stephen Pimpare, thank you very much for speaking with me about your new book.
Thank you, Peter. My pleasure.
Stephen Pimpare is Senior Lecturer in American Politics and Public Policy at UNH. His new book is called Ghettos, Tramps, and Welfare Queens. And you can find a list of his top 5 recommendations for films at our website, nhpr.org. This is The Bookshelf on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.